We begin the current daf in Seftes Gittin, daf Nun Aleph. We begin on the bottom of daf Nun Amud Beis, two lines up from the bottom of the Amud, where the Gemara continues the discussion from the previous daf. That is, the Gemara had quoted one of the halachas of our Mishnah that was Tikkun Olam, that was instituted as a way as perfecting commerce in the world. So one of them was that Ein Mitzin L'Achilas Peiris, that we cannot collect from the consumption of produce from the Chasam Shabbatim, which the explanation of this case is, if let's say somebody stole a field, let's say Shimon stole a field from Reuven, and then Shimon sold that field to Levi, and Levi unwittingly bought a stolen field. Now Reuven comes and some months later, and he says, "What are you doing on my field? Get off." He says, "What do you mean? I bought this from Shimon." He says, "Shimon doesn't own it. He stole it from me." He says, "I don't know." Okay, so he says, what do you want from me? I'll pay you for your expenses, but I'm going to take back my field. I'm just moving right back in. It's my field. So on that, Levi has a loss, A, on the field that he paid for. Moreover, there's the shvach karkois, that he made the land better, he fertilized it and whatnot, he planted trees. And moreover, which is the case that we're discussing over here, is achilas peiros, which now the original owner is going to be consuming the produce that he produced through his hard work. So although he's being compensated for certain work that he did, but there's the produce that he made, which now he's losing. So he goes back to Shimon to collect from Shimon. Now, if Shimon doesn't have any money left, so Levi could collect for the land itself, that he could collect from the Chasam Shabbatim, which are incumbent properties from the moment of that sale, because it's considered like a milva bishtar. That's the way Ula had explained the name of Rish Lakish. In contrast, and this is the first interpretation that we quoted on the previous daf, what's with Achilles Peres? That said, Ula, name of Rish Lakish, Lafisha and Kesuvin. The produce are not written in the document, because although he mentions that whatever's going to happen, I'm going to pay you back for, which includes even the payers, and that's what he could collect from Shimon himself, but it's not written in a way of that there could be that which payers, because they weren't produced yet, and since they weren't produced yet, it's not like it was written in the document, and that's why you cannot collect those from Nechasim Shabbatim. So although the thief is going to have to pay you back for the payers, can't go ahead and collect those from Nechasim Shabbatim. That's one interpretation. Now, that's why Gemara continues in Reb Chanina Amar. He gives a different interpretation for why can the lekeach not collect for the loss of his payros that he had from this stolen field from the guy who sold it to him. In other words, to collect it from the Chasam Shabbatim. So he says, and he disagrees with Ula, because Ula said the reason is because it's not written. Reb Chanina says, no, even if it's written, lafish in ketzuvin, because they're not set amount, as the Tesis Rid explains, he can't collect from Mishabadim, because the whole concept of Mishabadim is that you tell the later purchaser, saying, why'd you buy from that guy? You knew that I had a lien on this property. And that is, as the Tesis Rid explains, and this is the opinion of Reb Chanina, you can't tell him that he could have been careful. Well, careful about what? There was no set amount for how much pay risk. We don't know how much you're going to produce. So what, you might make $10 worth of produce, you may make $10 million worth of produce. So no one's supposed to buy from anyone after someone already had an outstanding loan or sale, because it might produce so much, and that's what's going to create the achrayis. Achrayis is only something that is a set amount. Peiros, which is not a set amount, even though it would be written, it's not going to be something that you could collect from the Chasam Shabbat. That's Machlekes Reb Chanina and Rish Lakish. Now, that Gemara says, Ibailuhu, they actually had a question how to qualify. The Reb Chanina, Ketsuvin Ukesuvin Bai, this that he says that by the peiros that was produced by this lekeach, he can't collect from the Chasam Shabbatim because they're not set. So, okay, we understand that he holds it has to be a set amount. Then people could know, okay, this guy owes this other person this set amount. Let's leave that amount by him, because or else it's going to be collected from us as lekuches. Is it enough? Does it require aid that it has to be a set amount and that it be written in the document? Because generally what's written in the document is what creates a coil. People hear about it, they can be careful about it, and if they're not, then you could say, okay, now I'm going to collect from you, meaning the other lekuches that had purchased after this first one had already purchased. Oy, or as the Gemara continues at the top of Nanalf Manalf, Dilma Ketsuvin. No, maybe as the simple reading of Reb Chanina's opinion is, as long as there's a set amount, Vavapish and Ketsuvin, even though it's not written in a document, in other words, as Rashi explains, does Reb Chanina hold that even a milva al peh, a oral loan, which has a set amount, because we know how much the loan was for, that then that lender could collect from the Chasam Shabbatim? So is it that he needs both? Or it's only actually ketuvin being enough? So the Gemara says, Toshima, let's come in here, we'll bring your raya, the Idmar, because it was said as follows. Mi shemeis v'neach shtei banos uben. Someone died, and he left over three children, two daughters and one son. Now, v'kadma harishayna, the first daughter went, v'not le'is nochasim. She took a tenth of the estate, which that's the halacha that when the orphan girl gets married, she takes a tenth of the estate, which is to provide what's called the parnasa of her nedunya, of her dowry when she's getting married. She needs certain money to start off a marriage. Besides all the sustenance that she gets from her late father's estate, she takes a tenth of it when she gets married. So the first daughter, when there were three children still alive, the son was still alive, so the son really owns all the money, but the daughters get fed from the estate. Moreover, when the daughter moves on to her new husband, she takes a tenth of the estate. Now, says the Gemara, below he speaks shnia ligvis, but the second daughter didn't get a chance to collect her tenth of the estate, meaning her parnasa, meaning this dowry, because she didn't get married, acha mesa ben. Until, in other words, she didn't get a chance to collect before the son had died. Now, when the son dies, now there's only these two daughters left. Now the inheritance, the whole estate, falls for these two daughters. So Amar Rabbi Yechanan says, Shnia Vitra. The second daughter has lost her rights to collect the tenth of the estate. In other words, we don't say, wait a second, you got married first, you collected a tenth of the estate. Now me, the second daughter, I didn't get a chance yet. Now we're splitting the inheritance amongst us. Before we do 50-50, let me first take my tenth, because you also took a tenth, and then we do 50-50. And that is that the opinion of Rechen is that you don't do that. Because the whole point of the Isur Nechasim of the tenth of the estate for the dowry is because they don't have their own money. The son is the one who has all the money. Whereas over here, there's a lot more money because you have 50%. The fact that you didn't collect your 10%, that's not enough of a reason. And we're not going to first do 10 and then 50-50. We do 50-50. And whatever you need from your 50% of the shares, you can use for your marriage. That was what Rabbi Yechanan said. Now, on that, Rabbi Chanina asked on Rabbi Yechanan, again, this is the Rabbi Chanina, and that's what we're bringing in this Machlekes Amirom regarding the question we had regarding Rabbi Chanina's opinion. He said, what do you mean? Because the first daughter went first, the second daughter loses? What do you mean? He says, G'doy l'mazu amru. He says, even greater than this discussion that we're having regarding having the second daughter collect her Isur Nechasim, we find that even if the brother, there were three children, two daughters and one son, if the brother goes and sells all the estate, the halacha is, maitzin, we remove from the purchasers the tenth of the estate, leparnasa, for a daughter that's the orphan that's going to get married. And that's even though ve'emitzin lemezainis, it's even though, as we said in our Mishnah, we don't collect for her sustenance from the chasim shebadim, and yet, for parnasa, we see how much it's a collectible for the orphan girl when she's going to get married, that even from the chasim shebadim, we're going to remove it if the son sells it off to other people. That Amar Shnei Vitra, and that's Rabbi Chanina says Rabbi Yechanan. And you're saying because she didn't get a chance to collect before the inheritance fell for them, then she's going to lose her right to the tenth. But that's his Kal V'chaim. He's saying if it's even mishubed by others, which is greater than this, meaning to say, who said she collect from the Chasam Mishabadim, as we find that she can't collect for her sustenance from the Chasam Mishabadim, and still we say that in such a case she wouldn't lose her tenth of the estate. So now where it's here, we have the whole money. Then we're going to say that she loses it? Of course not, says Rabbi Chanina. The second daughter, before they split the 50-50, she'll first take her tenth of the estate, just like the older daughter had took, because that's a right she definitely has, as we see even from the Chasam Mishabadim, and then they split it 50-50. That's the Machlekes Rabbi Chanina and Rabbi Yechanan. Says the Gemara, to prove the question that we had, V'parnasa, now regarding this tenth of the estate that is provided for the daughters when they get married for their dowry, to make its kaitza, that's something, that's a set amount. We all know it's a tenth of the estate. And mechdev lo ksiva, but it's not written anywhere in the document that they collect this tenth. And yet, v'komaitziya, still this daughter, as we brought in the Gemara, could remove it from the chasim mishabadim. So obviously we see, and this is the halacha that Rabbi Chanina brought, his whole basis of what he's arguing on Rabbi Yechanan regarding the case of, if lo hispika ligvois at shemesa ben, which was from the halacha of if it's by mishabadim. So we see the Rabbi Chanina obviously holds that when you have something that's a set amount, like this parnasa, which is the dowry for when they get married, you could collect from the chasim mishabadim, even though it's not written, like this case, which was exactly like that, where it's katsuvin, but it's not kesuvin, it's not written, and still you could collect from the chasim mishabadim. So that similarly answers the question that we had. Now the Gemara says, no, it's not a raya. Shani parnasa, that case is different regarding the dowry. Kivin the islay kala, since the word gets out. In other words, from the moment that the father dies, everyone knows that a daughter takes a tenth of the estate for when she gets married. So kemandach sibadami, it's like it's written. In other words, we could say that really Rabbi Chanina requires both written and set amount. Now, though there, you're right, it's not literally written, but it's like, it has the same characteristics as written. Whole point of being written in the shtar is that there could be a koil, that word gets out, and therefore people, the lekuchas, know to be careful, and if not, it's your loss, we could collect from you. So here, it's like, it's kesuvim, because everybody knows when the father dies that his daughters are going to be collecting their tenth. So if someone's buying the whole estate, this dead man's estate from the son, he definitely knows it's the same characteristic as kesuvim, that the daughters are going to collect the tenth from him, and that's why they could. But maybe ketuvim itself would not be enough. Now the Gemara says, Masa Rav Huna bar Manoach. He asks regarding this machlekes, Ula in the name of Reish Lakish and Reb Chanina, regarding what is the reason why you cannot collect from the Achilas Peiris, from the Chasim Shabbadim. Is it because, like Ula says, because it's not written, or it's because, like Reb Chanina says, because it's not set amount? So he asks on Ula's interpretation. And this is based from a Mishnah Masechet Ksubis. The Mishnah there talks about that if someone marries a woman, and she made up with him, as the prenuptials when they get married, that he's going to feed her daughter, she has a daughter from a previous marriage, he's going to feed her daughter for 5 years. Now, within those 5 years, he actually divorces this woman. Then this woman gets married to another man. And again, with this second husband, she makes up with him, as long as he supports her daughter for 5 years. Now, she has two husbands, one an ex and one a current, that are feeding her daughter for 5 years. So she doesn't need double sustenance. So one feeds her, and one gives the money of how much the food costs. Now, the Mishnah there continues and says that Mesu, that when these two husbands die, their own daughters could only get sustenance from available assets that they have, not from incumbent properties, because that's exactly the halacha we said in our Mishnah. You cannot collect for the sustenance of the wives, the widows, and of the daughters from the Chasim Mishabad. And that's because that's a tikkun olam, because no one's going to want to buy from any man, because the moment he dies, then retroactively everything that was bought from the moment he got married, which was 40 years ago, 50 years ago, are all going to be Mishabad, and you don't know how much money that is. So regarding his own daughters, they can only collect from the Chasim B'nei Chayrin. But interestingly, this stepdaughter, Nizaynis from the Chasim Mishabadim. She actually, not only could she get fed from available properties, if there's no available properties, she could collect and get fed from incumbent properties. Because she, interestingly, is like a creditor. Because here you have a woman, a daughter, who wasn't based just on the requirements that there are of the Tanai Bezdin, that you have to feed your own daughters after you die. Here, the woman made up with the husband, prenuptials, you're going to have to feed her. So he's like a debtor for those 5 years. So a Baal Schaiv, a creditor, could collect from the Chasim Mishabadim, just like any loan, any sale. But one thing the Gemara is bringing, what Rav Huna bar Manoach is asking from this Mishnah, that we see, since the husband had made up, kaitzi, set a certain amount of sustenance for a period of 5 years, see, even though it wasn't written, still you see that the daughter could collect from the Chasim Mishabadim, which is like Reb Chanina, that the primary criterion is ketsuvin is a set amount, but it's difficult to Ula. Because Ula said, that's not enough, it has to be written. But here it's not written, it's just that he made up. He said, fine, I'll provide for your daughter for 5 years. So you see that ketsuvin is the criterion and not ketsuvin. So Netan Gemara says, no, it's not true, it's not difficult on Ula. Hachamayaskina, what's the Mishnah there talking about Mesach Tiksubis? Bishakanu miyadi. That actually there was an acquisition, it wasn't just an oral agreement. They made a kinyan, and as Rashi explains, generally the way a kinyan is done when there's acquisition is that it's written down, and since it's written down a document to provide the proof for the acquisition, so that's why there's a koil. So there actually is kesiv, and that's why she could collect from the Chasim Mishabadim. Now the Gemara asks, Ihachi, but if that's the case, as we have to answer according to Ula Nimer Reish Lakish, that it was written, then Bonleis Nami. Then even his own daughters also should be able to be fed from the Chasim Mishabadim, because since there was actual kinyan, it's not just like a regular Tanai Bezdin. It was that there was a kinyan, it's written in a document, the koil goes out, so then they should also be able to be fed from the Chasim Mishabadim. Why do you say that his own daughters are only going to be fed from the Chasim Necharin? So the Gemara answers, no, Bishar Kanu Lezu, Vole Kanu Lezu. In the case of that Mishnah is talking about, where for Bas Ishtai, for the 5 years, they made a kinyan. For his own daughters, he didn't make a kinyan. Now the Gemara wonders why. My Pascha, where did the Tana in the Masechet Ksubos see fit to qualify and say that, oh, when it comes to his own wife, when his own daughters, then he doesn't make a kinyan with his wife that he's going to feed his daughters after he dies. But for his wife's previous daughter, Oh, there he did make a kinyan. Why? Why would he do that for his stepdaughter, not for his own daughters? If you're saying he made a kinyan when they got married, he should do it for his own daughters just like he does it for his stepdaughters. So the Gemara answers, Bas ishto yidahavi b'shas kinyan. The difference is that by his wife's daughter, who when he was marrying her, she was already there. She's from a previous marriage. So mahani lo kinyan. So it helps for her the acquisition because she's around. Bitu delahavi b'shas kinyan, but his own daughter, who wasn't born yet at the time that he married his own wife, who's going to be his own daughter. So it doesn't help to make an acquisition for her to be able to collect if you don't even live. You don't exist. I can't make a kinyan for you to be able to collect if you're not alive yet. Now the Gemara asks, wait a second. You're right. That would be the generic, generally what would be where, yes, one's own daughters are not born yet when he marries his own wife, who he's going to have daughters from. And but Bas Ishtay, that they're around, so that makes sense on some level. But the Gemara asks, Milo yaskinan dahavet tavai b'shas kinyan. Can it not be talking about that actually both of them were there at the time when the kinyan was made? In other words, isn't it understood from the Mishnah, even in the case of his own daughters were around at the time of the kinyan? Because the Mishnah doesn't make any differentiations in that ksubis regarding his own daughters. So seemingly it would be even if they are around. Now, how would it be talking about that from his own wife, his future daughters are alive already? Well, it would be talking about the girsha, where that after they were already born from their own union, he had daughters, then he divorced his wife, then via hadra, then he remarried his wife together with her daughters, which are his own daughters too, and then he made up all these conditions because the Mishnah doesn't differentiate. So then we're back to the question. Just like when he's marrying his wife who has a daughter from different marriage, there you say paskimoi, so why can't you say then the same thing should apply for his own daughters, when he remarries his wife, that it shows to be Pascha and Mai, because it's seemingly the same type of a case. And if it is, then the daughter shows to be able to be eaten from the Chasim Mishabadim and not just only from the Chasim Necharet. So El Rav, the Gemara explains that Bitoi, the Bitznai Bezen Ka'achla, regarding his own daughters he has to feed them after he dies because of a condition of the courts. The courts require that the father feed his daughter. So Le Mahani Lo Kinyan. So for his daughters, the acquisition doesn't help because he's already mechuyev, he's already obligated from the Tnai Bezdin. Bas ishto delav b'tnai bezdin kachla, but his wife's daughter, who doesn't have to feed her based on any conditions of the courts, mahani la kinyan. So therefore the acquisition that he makes, which is that he creates a kinyan to obligate himself, and as we said, it's even written in the shtar, that he could obligate himself, and that's why he's mechuyev, and that's why it could be considered balas chayv, and she collects from the chasam mishabadim, his own daughter, where he's already obligated anyway, so therefore there's no efficacy of the kinyan, and therefore she's not going to be able to collect from the chasam mishabadim. I think about one. Why? Pchimigra gara. What do you mean to say that because his own daughter has rights to get sustenance after he dies, that's why she now, when there's a kinyan done with her, she can't collect from the chasam mishabadim. Why? You're right. Tanai Bezin says that she could collect from the chasam nechayrit. But now he's taking it further and doing a kinyan. Why wouldn't that help to help her eat from the chasam mishabadim to make her like a balas chayv? So El Rav, the Gemara concludes as follows. You're right. Actually, the logic is going the other way. Bitoi, by his daughter, kivin de b'tnai bezin ka'ochlo, since he's obligated to feed her, meaning she eats from his estate after he dies, from the rights of the courts. The courts make that proviso. Now, moreover, as we're explaining, the case is talking about when he's marrying these women, whether that she has a daughter from a previous marriage or from his own marriage, that they're making a kinyan. So here, actually, he's more worried and more concerned to make sure he fulfills his obligation, which is to make sure that his daughters have food to eat from after he dies. So Eimet Srari. So actually, the Gemara says we have to be concerned by his own daughters, that maybe he took a bundle of money in Atfasa, and when he was still alive, he put aside to give her that she'll have after that he dies, and actually that's why by his own daughter they cannot collect from the Chasam Mishabadim, and only from the Chasam Echarim, from his own estate, because we have to be concerned that actually maybe he already gave her the money that she's going to need after that he dies. That's why you can't collect from the Chasam Mishabadim, because maybe he already paid up from your late father. Now, that's what the Gemara concludes. It's not difficult from this question, as we had asked on Ulo, because actually here we are talking about that there is a kinyan. And hence, as Rashi explained, whenever there's a kinyan, there is going to be kesiva. So that's why by Bas Ishtay, she could collect her 5 years' worth of sustenance from the Chasam Mishabadim. Now, regarding the question that we asked, well, so what's with the daughter? Why can't that also be talking about that you remarried her and that there's a kinyin and therefore there's a ksiva and therefore they could also collect from the chasim mishabadim? That's what we said, that actually, yes, she should be able to collect from the chasim mishabadim. The reason why he can't is because we have to suspect that he was so concerned by Bas Ishta, he doesn't know Tanai best. So he's like, okay, so he's not going to give her money beforehand. So therefore, there she could collect from the chasim mishabadim. Here, you can't collect from creditors because we have to think that maybe you really got it from your father because he was so concerned with the Tanai Bezin and that he made a kinyan. That's why you could only collect from the chasim nechar. So the Gemara says, Toshima, come in here. Let's go back to the question that we had with Reb Chanina, how we started off, where we want to know this that he qualifies the criterion as has to be ketsub in a set amount to collect from the chasim mishabadim regarding achilas peiris. Was that only ketsubin, or does it have to be ketsubin and ketsubin? Does it have to be a set amount and writ? So the Gemara said, let's bring a rabbi, because Amr Ibn Nasan, he says, Emasai, when did we say in the Mishnah, this halacha that we're discussing, when the guy who bought the field from the thief cannot collect from the what's being consumed of his produce by the original owner, he cannot collect that from the chasim mishabadim? Says Ibn Nasan, you know when that's talking about? That's bizman shekodem mikre shel sheni. That's when the purchase of the second purchaser, who the first purchaser who bought the stolen field is trying to collect from, because you bought after me, anyone who bought after me from this thief, this Shimon who sold the field for me, all his property was meshubed to me because that was his responsibility when I bought the field from him. So says Ibn Nasan, that's only if the purchaser of the second one came before l'shivcha shel rishon. Came before what was the increase of what the first guy had done. So essentially what comes out is that when the second guy buys from the seller, the first guy yet had not made the first field any better. There was no produce there yet. So therefore, says Reb Nasan, that's what the halacha of the Mishnah was talking about. You can't create a shibud yet. Shibud is only something that was already there. Now that wasn't there yet. So Lekeach Sheni wasn't taking anything that was yet meshubet to the first guy. Aval, but says Reb Nasan, but kadim shivcha shel rishon lemekhe shel sheni. But if let's say the first guy who bought the stolen field had already made the field that he bought better, it already had produced those payers. Now, since he made it better, as Rashi explains, everybody knows that this thief, he didn't know he was a thief, had sold him the field with achrayus, with responsibility. So there was already, the word had already gone out regarding the responsibility of that land together with the shvach and the peiris that was on the property of the gazan. Because before the second guy purchased, this first guy had already produced all these peiris. Says Reb Nasan, in such a case, gave him the chasim mishabadim. Actually, then this first purchaser would be able to collect from the second purchaser, from those in the chasim mishabadim, even for his peiris that he produced, because they were already there by the time that he had bought, and therefore he had already heard about it, and that was already something that created a shibud. Says the Gemara, Alma Mishum Deloi Kodemu. So we see that the whole reason of our Mishnah, according to Reb Nasan, why this first purchaser cannot collect from the second purchaser, meaning from the Chasim Mishabadim, for his payers, is only because it didn't come first. But if it came first, then even though it wasn't a set amount and it wasn't written, still we see that you don't need to have both of them. As long as, let's say, it was a set amount, which that's the case that we're describing, where it already had produced the payers, and then the second purchaser purchases, then actually he could collect from those nechasim mishabadim of the second purchaser, which, again, seemingly is like this halacha of Reb Chanina, that it's enough to be ketsuvin, even though it's not ketsuvin. Now, however, the Gemara concludes tanoihi. It's actually a machloikis tanoim. So, again, we see from that previous discussion, seemingly that according to if we're saying like Reb Chanina, this halacha of Reb Nasan, that it's enough to be ketsuvin, and it doesn't have to be ketsuvin. And similarly, that would be not like Rish Lakish's interpretation, that it has to be at least ketsuvin. Here we see from Reb Nasan that it's no ketsuvin here. It's as long as you had it a set amount beforehand, then it's going to be meshubet. It's just because in the case of the Mishnah that we're discussing, that at least the way Reb Nasan is qualifying it, that you're not going to be able to collect v'achilas pes from the chasim mishabadim, is only because it wasn't around yet at that point to create a shibut. But again, as the Gemara says, tanoihi, it's a machlekes tanoim. In other words, both of these interpretations of Reb Chanina and Ula are Tanoic opinions. The Tanag Lina Braisa. A might see, and one is not allowed to collect Achilas Peris for the consumption of his produce, which he had made and now was taken back by the original owner. Or Ulu Shvach Karkois for the increase of the quality that he had made of the land, which was then taken back by the original owner, or ulamazin each of abanis, or for the sustenance of a widow and the orphan girl, these things cannot be collected minachasim mishabadim from their common properties. Mimnei tikkun olam, because of tikkun olam, what is that? Lafi she'ein kisuvin, because they're not written, which again was like the interpretation of a ula in the name of a shlokish, and that is because if you're going to come to collect filakuchas from any of these things, which essentially they're even like a milva pad, they're like an oral type of an obligation, then no one is ever going, this is the tikkun olam, no one's going to ever purchase a field from his friend because he's afraid, maybe there's some type of a loan. How am I supposed to know? If it was in the documents, everyone knows about documents that are processed in the courts, but orally you do something, no one knows about it. So the same thing is by sustenance of a woman and the daughter, since it's not written. And the shvach kakoyis and the payers, they're not written. So therefore, that those things cannot be collected from the chasim mishabadim. Now, Amr Biyesi says that, what type of tikkun olam is over here? And he says, because, v'alo in kitzuvin, says, what are you talking about? It's not even a set amount. In other words, how can you say that there really should be liability for the lekech? It's just for tikkun olam that we don't. Says Rabbi Yasi, it's not true. How could a lekech even be careful in the first place? Even without tikkun olam, it wouldn't make sense that you could collect from lekuchos, because no one knows how much money the woman's going to have to eat and the daughter's going to have to eat, and how much shvach and peris this guy's going to make in this field. And that is the reason why you cannot collect from these things from the chasim shabadim. That's like the interpretation of Rabbi Chanina, and therefore we find Tanoic sources for both of these opinions in this halacha of why you cannot collect from the chasim mishabadim, achilas peiris, either because they're not written or because they're not a set amount. Now the Gemara continues quoting from our Mishnah that said, another tikkun olam was v'hamaytzei mitziyah lo yeshava. If someone finds a lost object and he returns it to someone else, and that guy claims, wait a second, that's not all of it. You gave me back the wallet, but where's the money inside and so forth? So although he's claiming that he's only giving him back part of it, and that would generally fall into the criteria of you're not chayav b'shvua because of tikkun olam, because no one's going to ever return lost object if he's going to be accused of not giving back the whole thing. Now, related to this halacha, the Mishnah, the Gemara says, Amar b'yitzchok, says, let's say if someone tells somebody else, shnei kisin kishurin mutasli, you know, you found two of my purses that were tied to each other. V'halo oimer, lo mutasli eliyachad, the other guy says, not true, I only found one, I'm returning to you the one that I found. So the halacha is, says Rabbi Yitzchok, that nishba, that he has to swear. Now, as the Gemara will explain, the reason is because purses don't detach one from the other. So essentially, the claim of the one who lost his object is what's called a tainus bari. It's a clear, definite claim, because since he knows that you have one of them, you're returning to me one of them, and I know that they were tied together and they don't just become untied, so I know for sure that you stole one of the two. Now, whereas this guy is admitting part of it, he's saying, no, I only found one and not two. So that's what's called Maidi B'miktis, and therefore it's Chayav B'Shvua. Now, whereas Shnei Shvarim Kishur Matzasli, let's say he tells him, you know, you found two of my oxen tied to each other. V'halo Oimer, Loha Ye'ele Echad. The other guy says, I don't know what you're talking about. I only found one ox and I'm returning it to. And there the halacha is Einanish, but there he doesn't have to swear. My time, what's the reason? Because Shvarim Menatchi Ma'adadi, oxen, they detach themselves from each other. So although they were tied, but they're mobile and they're animate, and therefore they can get out one from the other. And therefore, essentially the claim of the one who lost the oxen is only a tiny shem. It's a maybe claim. It doesn't know for sure this guy's a thief, because maybe he's a thief. But maybe they really untied each other, and really maybe he only found one. Whereas kisin loy menatchi ma'adadi, but purses, they don't become detached from one another. And therefore he knows, wait a second, they were attached. If you're returning to me one, you definitely took one off and you stole it, and there, that would be a tainus bari. That's why he would have to make a shavua. Now, let's say shnei shavurin kishurin matzasa. Let's say a different case by the oxen that he actually would have to make a shavua is, let's say he says, you know, you found two of my oxen that were tied to each other. V'halo imr, and this other guy, the one who finds it, says, yes, matzasi, I found both. But v'chzarti lach echad mehem, I already gave you back one of them, and now I'm giving you back the other one. This guy's saying, I'm not your Tumah, you never gave me back one of them. There the halacha is, hareza nishba. There the finder has to swear that it is like what he's claiming, that he had already given back the other one previously. Now here the reason is, because here it is considered a tainus bari, a definite claim that the seller is having, because even though he didn't see when he found it, and maybe he only really found one and not two, but here the case is talking about where the finder himself agrees that he found two, and he's just saying that he already gave it back. So that's where he's admitting in part of the claim of a definite claim that yes, your definite claim is that I found two and I agree I found two. But I'm already saying I gave you back one, and now you're saying when I'm giving you back the other one that I didn't give you back, I'm saying I did. So that's might be mixed time of a definite claim. The halacha is that yechayev b'shvua. Those are the halachas of Rabbi Yitzchak. Now the Gemara asked under Rabbi Yitzchak from our Mishnah. For Rabbi Yitzchak, less leha moitz mitzil leyeshovim and they take an oilam, doesn't he hold the halacha of our Mishnah? Our Mishnah said because of tikkun ha'olam, that when someone is returning a lost object, although the one who's being returned to claims that he only given me back half, and that would generally fall into the rubric of ma'idib mixis chayiv b'shavua, but by lost object we don't say that because no one's going to return lost objects. Why does the Yitzchak require, let's say by the case of when the two purses are tied together and he claims he only found one, that he has to make a shavua? So that the Gemara continues Amad Beis and says because who the amak kerbeleza ben Yaakov? Rabbi Yitzchak calls the kerbeleza ben Yaakov. Where when the claimant has a definite claim, what's called a tainus bari, then we don't consider the one who's returning the lost object as what's called a meshav aveda, as if he's returning something a lost object. Which yes, Rabbi Yitzchak agrees that a complete meshav aveda, where the guy who says the one who is being returned to has no claims in this, says, wow, thank you for returning to me, but I had a whole thing and I'm not sure did you find or not. When it shema, of course, a meshav aveda is not going to have to make a shavua. But there are certain types of cases, specifically like Rabbi Yitzchak is describing, where the guy that you're returning it to knows for sure that there were two wallets attached to each other. And if you're returning one, you for sure are stealing the other one, and therefore you have to make a shvu that you didn't. That's based on the opinion of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. The time like learning the Braisa, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, he says, Pa'amim sh'adim nishba tainas atma. There are times that a person has to make an oath based on his own claim. Now, right now it sounds like, in the Gemara, when we're quoting Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, that no one else is claiming anything from him, where it's his own words that are implicating himself, and therefore he would have to make a shvuah, where actually the Gemara later on is going to explain that it's not that no one's claiming from him. It's who would be the claimant that when he died, his son, the son of the guy who was owed the money to, is claiming it, which is similar to the case of Rabbi Yitzchak, where it's not a definite, but it's enough to be called a tainus bari, where they're claiming, no, for sure, you owe us this money, but it's not the claimant himself. And in such a case where it's a tainus bari, so although Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is calling it swearing al tainus atzmoy, because again, the guy himself who owes the money is not around anymore, still, since it's the son of that person is doing a tainus bari, he's going to have to make a shavua. So the Gemara says, Ketzad, what is this case of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov? So Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov explains, if let's say someone tells somebody else, mana lo avicha biyadi, you know, there's a certain amount of money, a mana, that your father has that by me. But I just want you to know, he tells to the son, v'chaltiv pras, which literally means to say that I gave him a part of it to eat, meaning I already paid him back half of the mana. So on that says Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, harize nishba. This is a case where the guy, who the son didn't know anything about the money he owed the father, but he's telling him, I admit, I have this mana, but I already paid him back half. He has to swear regarding the other half that he paid him up already. And v'zehu shenish batayin desatzmai. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, and this is the case that I'm talking about, where although it's his own claim, meaning no one was claiming him, he just admitted on his own claim requires him to make a shavua on the second half. Tachacham aymer, and the sages say they disagree. And they say, no, ein elik meshav aveda potter. This is like the classic case of our Mishnah, where he's returning a lost object, because no one was claiming anything from me. I just, out of my own goodwill, returned it. And therefore, although I'm saying that there was a mana, but I said I already paid it back, so therefore I'm for sure going to be exempt, just like a meshav aveda, because no one's going to want to offer on their own goodwill, because I'm going to have to make a shavua. I'm not going to offer. No one's claiming anything. So therefore the Chacham disagree, and they say, you're going to be exempt from making the shavua. Now the Gemara asks, and this is all leading towards the explanation that Rabbi Yitzchak is based on this opinion of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. The Gemara says, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, lesley? Doesn't he hold to the concern that our Mishnah, the tikkun ha'olam of meshav aveda pater, that someone out of his own goodwill is returning a lost object, which essentially this is like a lost object, is going to be exempt from an oath? Because if not, so then they're never going to do things out of their own goodwill. Well, that's essentially the same thing over here. No one was claiming him this month. That guy's dead. Him out of his own goodwill, he's, so to speak, returning a lost object to the son. So why would he be chayav on the shavua on the second half? So Amar Rav, Rav explains, you're right. It's not like no one's claiming him anything, because then, of course, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov would agree that it would be a classic meshav aveda, and he would be exempt from a shavua. He would still be toya noy katan. A minor orphan, He's making a claim, hey, you owe my daddy this money. And it's regarding that, that we're saying that's not a real taina, but it's still a taina. So we're calling it tainas atzmai, where he's saying, yes, I agree. I admit I owe your father a mana, but I already paid him back half. Now the Gemara wonders, what does that help by saying that there's a claim of a katan? Katan midim ashasha ispe? What, is there any substance to the claim of a minor? But what's not? We're in the Mishnah Masechta Shavuos that says, we don't make any oaths, we don't even consider the claim of a deaf mute, a mentally deranged person, and a minor. So what does it help? What does it help by saying that there's a claim of a cotton? It's like there's no claim of anyone at all. So therefore we're back to the question, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov should hold that you're exempt from this shvu because it's like a mishav aveda. So the Gemara says, no, my cotton, what do we mean when we say that it's a minor claiming? It really means a gadol, it means an adult. Now, by my curly cotton, why are we calling it a minor? Again, and that's why, since we're only calling it a minor, because we want to call it, as the words of Elazar ben Yaakov, tainis atzmai. But it's not really tainis atzmai, because if it was tainis atzmai, he would be exempt from mishavua, because it would be like a mishav aveda. So there is someone claiming him. Now, if there's someone claiming him, so then why are we calling it a mishav aveda? Why are we calling it tainis atzmai? Meaning, why would the chacham hold it yipater? Because it's really a minor, but it's not really a minor, we're saying. Really, it's an adult orphan. So why are we calling it, by my curly cotton, why are we calling him a minor? In regards to his father's business affairs, he's like a minor, he has no clue. So that's why we're calling him a cotton. No, so the Gemara asks, well, if that's the case, that an adult is coming with a claim, well, tainas atzmai, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, you're calling that his own claim? What do you mean, tainas achem? This is a regular case of when other people are coming with a claim to him, you owe our father a mana. We're talking about adult people. They could be 40-year-olds, and the father was 60, and he passed away. So that's a regular taina. So why would he say, oh, and he's going to have to make a shvu on taina sasma? What do you mean taina sasma? Taina sachem. So the Gemara answers, you're right. Taina sachem, what Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov was saying, it's others' claims, v'idos atzmai. But it's his own admission. In other words, regarding this, that he admitted that it's true like you're saying, and I still owe you from your father half of that mana, it's regarding that he's making the shvu. So the Gemara asks, so then what's Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov saying? What do you mean? Every claim is like that. It's tainas achem. It's when other people claim. And it's the person's own admission. And that's why you make a shvua. So therefore, essentially, the Gemara is asking two questions. Why in such a case would Rabbanan disagree? Why would they say that it's like it's a meshav eda and yepater? What do you mean? It's an adult making a claim. And that's a classic, actually, ma'idah b'mektzis, that you're going to be chayav a shvua. And moreover, the difficulty is, why would the words be that, like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov said, that pa'amim sha'adim nishba, sometimes a person makes a shvua on his own claim. What do you mean? In such a case where it's an adult making the claim, you always have to make a shvua. That's, he says, you owe me a mana, and he says, I only owe you half. That's ma'idah b'miktzis in yichayim b'shvua. So rather, the Gemara says that, you're right, we're not talking about that an adult is making the claim. It's actually that a minor is making the claim. Now the question was, but as we said from the Mishnah Masechta Shavuos, Einish Boina Tainis Katan, you don't have to make an oath regarding the claim of a minor. So that's what the Gemara is answering. That's only when the minor is making a claim of his own monies. That he's telling that person, what do you mean? I deposited, you owe me for my own money a mana. That you don't have to make a Shavuot, because as the Pasuk says in Shmais Chabez, regarding the requirement of an oath, it says, Ki yitin ish, when a man gives. And then there's the whole claim of back and forth and admitting half, then you have to make a shvua of moedim b'miktzis. Now, kiitin ish means a man, an adult, and not a minor. So when a minor is regarding his giving, kiitin ish has to be an adult, not a minor giving the money. But when the minor comes in the claim of his father's monies, and he's saying, you owed my father who gave you money, it was kiitin ish, then you have to swear even regarding the claim of a minor. Now, regarding the opinion of the Rabbanan, they actually hold, no, that even if the son was an adult, you wouldn't have to make a shvua. Why? That's as we learn in the Mishnah Masechta Shavuos, that if, let's say, someone comes to someone and he claims, mana la'aba biyadecha, you have a mana of my father in your hands, and then he responds and he says, no, I only have 50 dinar that I owe your father. The Rabbana hold that you're going to be exempt. Now, so what's this machlokes between the Rabbana and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov? It's b'dirama k'meflagi, they're arguing halacha of Rabba. Dama Rabba, because Rabba said, in other words, we're saying that according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, even on the claim of a cotton, you'd be chayav b'shvua, whereas according to Rabbanan, even the claim of the adult son, you'd be exempt from b'shvua. What's going on over here? So that's based on the halach of Rabba. Dama Rabba, the Rabba says, Memnei ma'amr Torah, he says, why is it that the Torah says, Why is it that when someone admits to part of a person's claim, he has to swear regarding the rest? Now, the reason why we're asking reasons for the halacha of the Torah is because it'll help us understand other halachas. So that says Rabba, Chazaka, there's a presumption that ein odem meis panav, a person would not have the audacity, bifnei bal chayve, in front of his creditor, to totally deny the claim. What, this guy lent $1,000, he says, what do you mean $1,000, what are you talking about? No one has the audacity to just deny the whole thing. Now, therefore, because the fact that he's admitting to part of that, that doesn't mean he's believed regarding the other half. The reason is because v'hai b'kuli boi l'michver le. The truth is, he would want to deny the whole thing. Now, v'hai d'l'kafri, why doesn't he deny the whole thing? Mishum de'in odemeiz panav b'fnei b'chavi, as we explained, because the person doesn't have the audacity in front of his creditor. So that's why he doesn't deny the whole claim. So therefore, he admits part of it. Now, and if you're going to say, now wait a second, we shouldn't have him make a shvuah on the rest because of what's called a migui, which is migui de chashad ha-mamayna, since he's suspect regarding money, which maybe he really owes. He just wants to deny. So therefore, we should say chashad ha-mashvuah. He should also be suspect regarding the oath. Regarding monetary law, he's violating. So why wouldn't he violate an oath? So that's what Rabbi explains, that it's actually not true, that he's not suspect regarding monetary law. And from the fact that he doesn't deny the whole thing. Now, because this that he admits half of it, the truth is, he really wants to admit the whole thing. He doesn't want to steal any money. Now, this that he doesn't admit, it's not because he wants to steal. In other words, you would say that, wait a second, he wants to deny the whole thing, this guy's a thief, so he's a liar too, so why would we make a shvu? What's the point? And I would say, no. This that he wants to deny the whole thing, it's not that he wants to deny to steal. Because the truth is that he would really want to admit the whole thing. And this that he doesn't admit is all because he's trying to just avoid, he's trying to delay, it's a delay tactic, to push away for now. Because Sava, he thinks to himself, look, when I have money, I'll pay him back. But I don't want him to take me to court and make me have to pay because I'm going to have to sell all my ass. I'm going to be stuck in a really difficult place. So I'll deny it. And when the time comes, I'll pay him back. But Am Rachmana, that's what the Torah says. Rami Shvua Lave. So you have to put an oath on him. Yeah, he's thinking to himself, I'll pay back when I have money. I'll deny and I'll pay back. That time will never come. Because once you know him to pay, you're never going to willingly want to give. Torah says, make an oath and make him pay up. In other words, Moed HaMikdash is a unique situation where he really wants to deny, but he can't because how could I just make an outright lie to my creditor? So I'll admit halfway. Now, so we say, what do you mean? If he's denying, so maybe he's going to lie to you. He says, no. Really, he would admit the whole thing because he really doesn't want to steal. The reason why he's not admitting is because he wants to delay, but he can't delay the whole thing because he doesn't have the audacity, so he admits halfway. So Torah says, we know what this guy's trying to do. Make him take a shvu on the rest, which he's not going to because he's not going to want to lie, and because he's only using as a delay tactic, and you'll be mechayev him right now for what he really owes. So that's the halacha of Rabba. So now the Gemara says, Rabbi Elazar and Yaakov Savar, he holds, regarding this halacha of Rabba, regarding the conceptualization of the halacha of Moed HaMikdash, there's no difference for his creditor, and there's no difference for the son of his creditor. In the mayas, a person will not have the audacity. Tell the son of his creditor, say, what, your father lent me money? The guy says, well, you're such a liar, I can't believe it. My father lent you money. And he's like, he wouldn't have the audacity. So the hilkach, therefore, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov holds, lav meshav avedahu, we can't consider you as a meshav aveda. So although, yes, essentially it's a tainus atzmai, because, again, it's not tainus atzmai, really the minor's coming with a claim, but he's just a minor, but it's the minor coming in the place of the father's claim. So, says Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, of course you're going to have to make a shvu of Moed HaMikdash, because the creditor is no different as the son of the creditor. He wouldn't have the audacity. And the reason why that's why he's not denying the whole thing. Now, really, he would admit the whole thing, but he's trying to push off. Oh, so that's a Moed HaMikdash. You have to make a shvu. Now, that's what the Gemara was saying there, Rabbi Yitzchak, regarding Hashavas Aveda, is the same thing as this Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, where the guy who says, let's say the case of the two wallets attached to each other, he's coming with a tainus bari. He's saying, no, for sure they were together. That's the same thing as the son of the mess saying, you owe my father a mana, where, still bless him Yaakov, so that's a tainus bari, and then he's going to have to make a shvu of a Moed HaMikdash. That's the same thing Rabbi Yitzchak calls, that you're going to, that although, yes, essentially you're, it's tainus asma, like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is calling it, it's a meshav aveda, but it's not true, because the guy that you're returning it to has a definite claim, So then you're going to have to be make a shvur moedim miktus. Whereas Rabbanan, Rabbi, the Rabbanan hold, no. Baihu deinem meis. This halach of Rabba is only regarding the creditor himself. There he doesn't have the audacity to deny the whole thing. Abim noy meis. The son, he would have the audacity. He would say, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know your father anything. He would deny the whole thing. Umidaloy meis. Now the fact that he's not having the audacity and is bidding half of it, that makes sure of Eduhu. He's just returning a lost object. Because there's nothing compelling him to admit. So it's so to speak out of his own goodwill, like someone that lost an object. So therefore, you don't have to make a shvua. You're like a Mesha Veda. Now that's like the opinion of our Mishnah regarding a lost object, not like the halacha of Rabbi Yitzchak, where although it's, quote, like this tiniest bari, it doesn't make a difference because essentially it's someone out of his goodwill that he would he's returning it on his own. That's why it's considered a Mesha Veda. You don't have to make a shvua. And that's why the halacha of our Mishnah was the same thing. By a regular Mesha Veda, even if the guy comes with a tiniest bari and says, what do you mean? You're returning a lost object? Where's the other purse? Says, what do you mean? Out of my own goodwill, I'm returning this. Even though you're coming with a tiniest bari, I would have the audacity. It's not like a creditor himself. And that's why our Mishnah says that if someone's a Maitzi Mitzia, then he returns it, and the other guy claims it was really double that, he's not going to be chayiv in the Shvua. That's the Machlekes. Again, but that's the opinion of Rabbi Yitzchak, which is like based on Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. When there's something like a tiniest bari, then even though essentially it's like a Mesha Aveda, but the guy who you're turning it to comes with a tiniest bari, then you're going to be chayiv in the Shvua of Maitzi B'Mitzis.